Tape number 8, concluding this series of recordings on the underlying spiritual meaning of world civilization. Gordon Brown.
So there we were when tape 7 came to an end, exploring the right-hand wing of the chart of the triptych and concluding our glimpse of the very great and altogether unique contribution which John Dorley made to the ongoing movement of Christian Science in the years following the founding mission of Mary Baker Eddy. Bringing to light just what the divine system consists of and is, to which the textbook says divine metaphysics is now reduced for the purpose of human comprehension, and which is specifically denominated Christian Science. In fact, it's not too much to say that what the Dorley mission provides is the second major landmark in the history of Christian Science, subsequent to the unparalleled founding career of Mary Baker Eddy herself. And it would seem, wouldn't it, as if when it's spiritually understood, his mission was brought to a focal point with that, what we might call, immaculate conception of the motherhood of God, or the matrix structure of the holy four-square city which he drew up. The city itself, irrespective of the symbol, of course, being that which comes down from God out of heaven to deliver mankind from the death-dealing imposition of believing that man has ever been born of the flesh instead of his being born in science of spirit God. And therefore another big feature of John Dorley's research work closely allied to the matrix was when he recognized the vital import of the way in which the textbook uses the different terms for science in its elucidation of divine metaphysics. Science by itself, that is, without a qualifying adjective, then divine science, then Christian Science, and very occasionally, absolute Christian Science. This latter term being used no more than 5 times throughout the whole book, and always signifying the nothingness of death, and consequent resurrection of humanity above the confines of mortality. Now perhaps a simple and living way of assessing the relative values of these terms, which are such an integral part of the book's scientific terminology, aren't they, is to see them in relation actually to the matrix city itself, which John Dorley loved so dearly. 2 complementary views of this city being detailed at the close of the chapter The Apocalypse under the headings City Four Square and City of Our God. Remember that? You see, when on page 575, the City Four Square, that's the name in the marginal heading there, isn't it, comes down from God out of heaven, the associated term is divine science. We realize that, do we? But when on page 577 it returns, as it were, to God in heaven under the title City of Our God, the associated term is Christian Science. The difference being that in the first instance the city has 4 equal sides and is said to be our city. Now remember that. while in the second it has four cardinal points and is called City of Our God. Our city? City of Our God. See, the first suggests a square formation, doesn't it? Whereas the second, with its cardinal points of the compass, suggests that it is circular. Now, this tells us that what comes to us from God as our city must return where it came from or be seen to be God's city. We see that. Because then, as the text says, it is without boundary or limit. Now, this is the same, of course, as when Jesus said of his own Christ identity that he came forth from the Father and went back to the Father, solving in the process the problem of apparently fallen man. Which means that unless divine science appears to us in the form of the healing, restorative system or body of Christian science, then to all intents and purposes it has boundaries and limits. And therefore our need as man is to find ourselves belonging wholly to our God, so that in the words of Paul, we are not our own, but are God's. Our city, our body, in other words, not really our city, our body. We've got to understand it to be the very city or body of our God. That's so, isn't it? You see, when the city of divine science, the city four square, comes down to us from God out of heaven, it's the revelation to us, isn't it, that God and man, heaven and earth, divinity and humanity, are forever indivisibly one. And it's this indivisibility of God and man that constitutes for each one of us, by reflection, of course, constitutes our true spiritual individuality. Hence, it's in divine science that the true idea of individuality in that scientific sense really lies. Whereas it's in Christian science that the true idea of universality lies. Now let's be very careful of this because, of course, there's no such thing as the one without the other. And therefore the complementary natures of City Four Square and City of Our God as being two views of the same holy city, each essential to the other, in the same way that divine science and Christian science are two essential views of identically the same science. Science unqualified, that is. You see, it's only when the holy city is seen as the city of our God, with the accent on Christian science, and therefore on universality, that is said to be without boundary or limit. Whereas City Four Square as our city, until it's understood to be God's city, seems to be surrounded by walls of limitation. Hence the need for our individuality to be found to be universal and all-encompassing in order to be free from these boundaries and limits. And it is found to be universal. Our individuality is found to be universal when divine science is reduced for this very purpose to the all-inclusive system of Christian science. So that when the revelation comes in divine science that God and man are indivisibly one, the belief that man has ever fallen away from God disappears, and we are restored, healed, in Christian science, to the heaven from which in truth we've never really been severed. Yet you can see, can't you, that this sense of restoration, healing restoration to God, or destruction of the belief in dualistic mortality can only come about by reason of the fact that Christian science itself is absolute. In other words, because of absolute Christian science. Hence, Mrs. Eddy says categorically, Christian science is absolute. Because only that which is absolute and unconditional can possibly absolve us, can it, from belief in that which is dualistic or dependent on something outside of itself to which it has to apply itself. And therefore it is that divine science and Christian science in its absoluteness, firstly, as that which heals us of sin, disease, and death, secondly, make comprehensible to us the eternal science of our being. So these different, vitally important ways in which the textbook uses the term science played their indispensable part to John in John Dorley's appraisal of the workings of divine metaphysics. We know that, don't we? Now, incidentally, later in 1950, the year of his passing, the heavenly four-square city having been revealed as the matrix or womb of the motherhood of God, the Roman Catholic Church instituted as dogma the bodily assumption of the Virgin Mary into heaven. Now, what do you think of that? Interesting? You see, from the point of view of universal truth, inevitable, I suppose. And of course, another most notable factor of the John Dorley career, which we certainly mustn't overlook, is that through this revelation of the non-sectarian science and system that lay deeply embedded in Mary Baker Eddy's recording of her own momentous discovery, and his profound appreciation of the scientific language involved, a language akin to that, obviously, which voiced itself to and was responded to by the multitude on the day of Pentecost. You see, what his work did was therefore to make it possible for man, the generic term for mankind, to succeed to the leadership in Christian science as nominated by Mrs. Eddy herself in 1901 at the opening of the present God-crowned 20th century. Because what we must not be persuaded into believing is that John Dorley was a leader appointed to succeed Mrs. Eddy as leader, because if this were so, then another leader would be called upon to succeed him, then another to succeed him or her, and so on ad infinitum, in a kind of Romanized apostolic succession. No. her only successor in leadership must be understood, as she herself intimates, to be generic man, the spiritual idea of God, the divine reality of the human race itself, which of course includes all of us individually working together collectively, conscious of the fact that in science there's really but one universal man. So let's rejoice in those words of Mrs. Eddy, which she once voiced to students. Do you remember? When we work together as one, it will be seen as the Son of God. Now that's in Collectanea on page 82. Isn't that wonderful? But oh, what it requires of us by way of laying down the personal, mortal sense of self, doesn't it? So can we see now how the second main phase of the triptych's right-hand wing comes to an end in 1950, and how historically this has ranged from around 1938 up to that point? And what has characterized it is the vision of the oneness of the system, which Mrs. Eddy on those several occasions in the textbook identifies specifically, as we've said, as Christian Science itself, and which is symbolized for us in part at least today by that wonderful little graphic structure which John Dorley left of the matrix calculus of divine reality. Also, of course, by the way in which this sevenfold, fourfold symbol is the key which unlocks for us the divine science of the scriptures. Now we can also see, can't we, that if the first section of this right-hand panel emphasizing the idea of, as we said before, differentiation inherent in the numerals of infinity, if this has the accent on the orderly flow of the divine word, and the second section emphasizing the calculus with its matrix and therefore the overall system itself has the accent on the unitary Christ, this enables us now to enter upon the third main section, where the emphasis clearly is Christianity. Because this is where those students who had responded spiritually to the magnitude of what had been shown them throughout the first two sections were naturally impelled through their study, their practice, and their individual research work to make all this deeply and subjectively their own. Well now, in the world itself, nuclear fission had led to nuclear fusion, and the hydrogen fusion bomb, far more deadly than the uranium fission bomb, is built and begins to be stockpiled by those two confrontational world superpowers, the USA and the USSR. At the same time, artificial satellites are rocketed into orbit around the globe, with the result that mankind enters what is called the space age. And coincidentally comes the discovery in biology of the genetic, so-called DNA code, apparently confining humanity inexorably to the laws of mortal heredity. The result? Microbiology and microelectronics come more and more to the forefront of consciousness and herald, say the physicists, a second industrial revolution far greater in magnitude than the first. Now, this is also when the electronic computer has its inception, aping artificially the action and resources of the human brain and counterfeiting the instantaneous workings, timeless calculations, that is, of the all-knowing mind of the total universe, the everywhere present mind of all mankind. So what an incredible counterfeit the modern computer is, isn't it? Of the matrix calculus of infinity as this obtains in divine science. So to return now to our main topic, it's said by a student from America that John Dorley left behind him a band of students who did not depend on him personally for the forward march of their subject, and how this was the criterion that what had been revealed to them was indeed the science of life. And this was because what he'd always advised them was, in his own words, stick like glue to the Bible and science and health, and you can't go wrong. Or again, go with your own bucket to the fountainhead of truth, rather than take an empty cup and ask to have it filled from somebody else's bucket. So we can see, can't we, how the tenor of the new epoch now opening up for students of the pure science and system of non-sectarian Christian science was that, as in the case of the children of Israel in the book of Judges, there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own individual eyes. Significantly, therefore, in the world picture, in 1959, on the same horizontal in the center panel as the start of the Protestant Reformation, in which man begins to free himself from the hidebound clutches of ecclesiastical monopoly, you see it there, Western man's newly invented rocket propulsion enables him to free himself completely from Earth's magnetic gravitational pull and to travel weightless in outer space. And so please note how the operative spiritual tone at this point is truth in its aspect as soul, which means man individually asserting his independent spiritual freedom. How remarkable, therefore, that if you continue this line of truth as soul across to the left-hand panel, it's where, in the world picture, the Wright brothers achieve for the first time in history powered flight, and so lift themselves free from Earth's immediate imprisoning hold. Truth of soul. You like that? But the situation amongst the students of non-organizational Christian science, where the accent is firmly on individual initiative, with perhaps not enough thought as yet for collective wholeness is due for a change and development. And therefore, around about the mid-1960s, the idea that begins to sound imperatively in the hearts and minds of many responsible students is the need for all to be one, to find themselves, that's to say, part of one grand brotherhood, in accordance with the tone of truth, as being part and parcel of the goal of Christian Science itself. So again, can you trace that tone of truth as truth across on the chart there to the left-hand panel, where we have the building of Mrs. Eddy's model branch church in Concord? Because it's this sense of harmonious unity in Christian Science that the self-governing branch church properly stands for. And therefore we can see, can't we, at this point, how thought has entered the fourth main section of the right-hand panel, where the emphasis shifts from Christianity to science. Students begin to give increasing attention to those wonderful later chapters in the Gospel of John, the science gospel, where Jesus commands them all to be one and to love one another as I have loved you. To be, that's to say, all with one accord, in one place, even as subsequently they are with one accord, in one place on the day of Pentecost, aren't they? Because on no other basis will they be truly receptive of the Holy Ghost or the descending Spirit of life, truth, and love, and so heal the world. You see, factionalism doesn't heal and redeem the world, does it? It just feeds it with the very thing that the world itself is suffering from and doesn't know how to get rid of. Do you agree with that? That they all may be one, Jesus had prayed at the end of John's Gospel. As thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee, that they also may be one in us. I in them, and thou in me, that they may be made perfect in one, and that the world may know that thou hast sent me and hast loved them as thou hast loved me. All for the purpose, you see, that the world itself now may know, which indeed means the sounding of the note of science itself, doesn't it? To which the Word, the Christ, and Christianity have led. As we come now to the close of the right-hand wing, and therefore near the close historically of the 20th century and the 6th millennium. And find ourselves on the very threshold of the 7th millennium itself. Very like the way in which Israel stood on the banks of the Jordan prior to entering the Promised Land. Because this 7th millennium, which we shall be turning to in a moment, as we bring this series of tapes to a close, is outstandingly the epoch in which the world itself begins increasingly to realize that Christian Science indeed is the second messianic advent, the promised comforter, and therefore constitutes the world's own promised land. In other words, that the divine Father, Mother, God, the principle which is love, has as the indispensable complement of the Christ Jesus mission sent Christian Science into the world as a spiritual reality of the world itself. And even as this was illustrated by the descent of the Holy Ghost on the day of Pentecost at the beginning of the Christian era. Hence the need for unselfed spiritual unity to be the order of the day, and therefore to destroy that foremost weapon of the carnal mind to divide and conquer. Because clearly, it's sectarian breakup in one form or another, isn't it, that would prevent mankind from entering upon its divinely bequeathed inheritance of being one grand brotherhood, or as the Apostle John puts it so wonderfully, loving the brethren, and therefore passing over from death to life. Please now turn the tape over.